Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hardcore is a new series from Heritage Radio Network. Over six episodes, we're taking a close look at the rebirth of American cider.
Really, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that cider started to be revitalized in the United States.
From the science of fermentation.
So yeast, it's a fungus, it's a unicellular fungus.
To the magic of terroir.
What really excites us is thinking about communicating that very sort of spiritual aspect of knowing a piece of land.
We're setting aside our cider donuts to gain a deeper understanding of this singular beverage.
I love a cider donut. You don't have to have a cider donut with your cider, and I will die on that point.
Subscribe to Hardcore wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Kiko Atayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi umami in izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Tetsuya Nick Sakagami, who is a fish expert based in Los Angeles. And Nick joined me on episode 70 and discussed the Kindai tuna, a unique experiment of farmed bluefin tuna by the Kinki University in Japan. And Nick works as an international business advisor to the university, imports sustainable tuna from Tahiti, and educate American chefs about fish, and among other things, there's so many things he's doing. And also, he recently published a book called Sushi Master, an expert guide to sourcing, making, and enjoying sushi at home. And it's a beautiful book, very practical, and I highly recommend it if you would like to make real sushi at home. So today, now Nick is here. We'll discuss, discuss the new Toyosu market in Tokyo. As you may know, the world's biggest fish market, Tsukiji, moved to a new location in October 2018, and it's been now over a year since the new market opened. So we'll talk about what was so special about Tsukiji and why it had to move, what are good and bad about the new Toyosu market, surprising episodes about the new market, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on heritageradionetwork.org website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review, hopefully a good one. We appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or kikotema.com. Now let's start a conversation with Tetsuya Nick Sakagami. Hello, Nick. Welcome
Hello.
Back.
Hi, thank you for waiting, inviting me back.
So, yeah, you have a lot to talk about always, so this is very exciting. So now, we'll talk about the Toyosu market in a moment, but for listeners who have not listened to episode 70, tell us about your background.
I grew up in Tokyo, and I moved here when I was 21. And I used to work for a fish wholesaler in L.A., and shortly after I started having my own fresh tuna importer business in Los Angeles. And... Currently, I still do fresh tuna import from Tahiti, import fish from Japan, Kindai University. And besides that, I have been consulting in sustainable fish branding in the U.S.
Mm. So basically, as far as I know, you always have, of course, seafood related, but more responsible consumption of fish.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And if I remember correctly, your family is from samurai, like, you know, from Shikoku, like something very authentic, right?
Yes. I'm the 10th generation of my father's family's main blood lineage, trunk. So I know who my great. And then if I go to the great graveyard site, you will see the who died when, at what age. So.
Oh, wow.
That doesn't bring me any money, but I'm proud of it.
Right. Wow. I can. I would like to see your 23andMe or something like that. All right. So let's talk about the market.
Yes.
So in order to discuss the Toyosu market, we have to talk about the legendary Tsukiji fish market.
Yes.
So what is the history of Tsukiji?
So Tsukiji market was almost 100 years old, and Tsukiji market was the center hub of anything, everything supplied to the restaurant in Tokyo area. And the Tsukiji market was, of course, a fish place, but surrounded by produce, dry goods, kitchenware, anything you need at chef restaurant, you can go there and walk around, and you can get there within one stop.
Mm.
So that was the center hub of culinary scene in Tokyo for almost a century.
Mm. Right, and you know, the Jiro dream of sushi, like for instance, the chef goes to Tsukiji, and
yes,
you know, you have very strong relationships with the specific,
yes,
wholesalers, and that's like, it's beyond just buy and sell,
yes,
location.
Yes.
Right. And what's really close to, you know, the most expensive sushi restaurant hub, Ginza. So that means something, I think.
Yes.
Right. And like you said, it's the fish market inside, and surrounded by, you know, of course, sushi places, like interesting eateries, like, you know, like Japanese style dashi egg, you know, egg roll and things like that.
Right.
So luckily, they remain still, even the main market moved to Toyosu.
Yes.
All those shops are there.
Yes,
so
they're there.
Right. All right. So how important was Tsukiji for chefs, retailers, consumers, whoever involved in the market in terms of, you know, like daily life? They just move, and how panicky it is.
Mm. Oh, just like you said earlier, Ginza, everybody knows Ginza's district with high-end boutique and high-end restaurant, and of course high-end sushi. And they are right next to Tsukiji.
Mm.
And Tsukiji was there. Therefore, Ginza restaurant area was developed.
Mm.
Because restaurants close at 11 or midnight. And then young guys, young chefs sleep for a few hours and get up 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock and take a hop on a bicycle and then ride to the Tsukiji market and do the purchasing and bring back to the restaurant around 7 a.m. and do the preparation and then take a 30-40 minute nap.
It was,
so that was their lifestyle, part of the lifestyle for the restaurant, but now it's gone.
Mm.
So it's a... the distance of Toyosu to Ginza is not biking distance.
Mm.
Well, unless you got a road race bike. That's a different story. But I don't know, maybe you can do Uber Eats or Grubhub. But realistically, between Toyosu and Ginza are car distance, drive distance.
It's so, like a half an hour or something.
Yeah.
Right. So what's within Tokyo? But, you know, I mean, within the... you know, 23 ward area, but still is far away. And I saw data as of 2015, the market traded around 1,700 tons of seafood.
Mm-hmm.
And the sales amounted to $14 million a day.
Mm.
So that's sizable.
Yeah.
And you can imagine how many people visit there and
yeah,
making all those purchases, and also not to mention sales.
Yes.
So, okay, so... why did Tsukiji have to move to a new market?
It was just old.
Mm.
And back in the day, when we didn't have cold chain cold chain available or refrigeration or refrigerated trucks available easily, that was there, and they have huge blocks of ice cube or ice, and like I said, people go there in mopeds or bicycle, mm-hmm. and they carry fish back to the restaurant, mm-hmm. and that was how the market was developed for a long time ago, and to adapt to the need or necessity of safety needs in modern society, they kept on adding on to their infrastructure, but at one point, it just adding on wouldn't work anymore. Right. And then, as if you have been to Tsukiji before, it's an open air market.
Birds and everybody trying to get fish.
And if you go to a Fulton Market in New York, Hunts Point, it's closed warehouse type and temperature control, air conditioned building.
Mm, right.
So that's a necessity of today's fish market.
Right. I mean, not long ago, Fulton Market used to be open too. So.
Oh, that was, yes.
Right.
The Fulton Market had horror stories, and the chef go, restaurant closed, get drunk, and hop on a limo and go there. Without sleeping, and then I want that everything, and the relationship between the chefs and the fishmongers at the old Fulton Market was unique.
Mm, yeah. That sounds scary. Even.
Yeah, sometimes.
Right. So.
So I'm sorry. Back to the subject. Yes, Tsukiji was simply getting old, and it was necessary, absolute necessity to move to an updated building.
Mm. So like you said, everybody's bringing things now in a modern truck-based refrigeration system. Mm-hmm. But I heard the Tsukiji originally was to accommodate the railroad-based transportation. So naturally, whole docking or unloading those things, very inefficient.
Yeah.
Right. And I heard the relocation to the new market delayed due to an issue of potential soil contamination because the new site was previously occupied by the Tokyo Gas, which was the largest provider of city gas in a metropolitan area in Tokyo. So, and then the issue was cleared. And I also heard the original relocation started to be discussed in 1960s. And then gradually, and eventually 2001, it got serious. And then this Tokyo Gas contamination discussion delayed, and then finally moved in 2018. So it's like slow process.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So where exactly is Toyosu? It's like you said we discussed half an hour away by car, but which area of Tokyo?
Toyosu is northeast from Tsukiji.
Mm.
It is close to Ariake convention site. It's vastly occupied by large buildings, convention centers, and
it's a redeveloped Tokyo Bay Area.
Yeah, it was the underwater
a few
hundred years ago. So
right, yeah. Okay. So and how do you get there? If I were just visiting.
The easiest is to hop on a taxi, 20 minutes from Tokyo Ginza, Tokyo Station area, and there are two, three different ways. Well, more ways to get there by train, but I think close to Shinbashi, there's a JR Yurikamome line, like monorail thing, and also this couple other subway lines that dumps you in front of Toyosu Fish Market, and. And there are the Toyosu Station, but that requires you to walk 10, 15 minutes to the entrance of the market.
Wow.
Because market itself is big. So if you're you get to the back of the market, you still got to walk around to the entrance.
Right.
So.
Wow. Yeah. So it's like a Madison Square Garden. You just walk and get to wherever you see it.
Yeah, good comparison, yes.
Right. So compared to the old Tsukiji market, what improvements do you find at the new market?
Oh, like I said, definitely air controlled, temperature controlled building. And I would say that allows wholesalers to have a vertical operation or seamless operational flow to ensure the safety of fish.
Mm.
Meaning that back in the day, because they used to add on, so here's a little fish wholesaler, but then, oh, we need to have a processing room, so they put a room somewhere nearby, right? Oh, we need ice, so they got to get ice from somewhere else.
Mm.
And then there's the disconnection of the operation here and there. And then, we need a freezer room because we have some fish process, but we didn't move everything today, so we want to put in a freezer.
Mm.
But then back in the day, they had to bring it to a different freezer. But today, on this Toyo's market, on the first floor is the auction market or wholesalers, mm-hmm. deal and wheeling plate floor. And then second floor, they have option to have their own processing room, freezing room, ice room.
Mm.
So it is physically, vertically integrated.
Streamlined and right. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, and I heard it cost $5.1 billion to build a new market. So that has to be better than the original.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I heard it's 1.7 times larger than Tsukiji.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
so. Well, Tsukiji was too small to begin with to handle the volume.
Mm.
And this, when you go there, you feel empty space.
Mm.
But not as in a way that when you feel it when you go to Fulton Market and Hans Point.
Mm.
Hans Point, you can see that, oh, here, occupancy when I was there 3 years ago, maybe 70%.
Mm.
2 years ago, 60%. Last year, 50%. Less and less people are doing business there. So you can see big, empty space not being utilized. Whereas Toyosu, it's just big and compartment rise for safety, potential contamination. It is big, but you don't know how much is being utilized or occupied because you can't see the ending. You can see how that room is or next behind the wall, what's in it, but it is big.
So it sounds like Tsukiji, just to be fair to Tsukiji, Tsukiji was open air, but they just cleanse, like wash everything very frequently. So it's kind of clean-ish. But now, the benefit of that Tsukiji is like really market energy and like this is happening.
Yeah.
It sounds like Toyosu, which I haven't been to. It sounds like a little quiet and pretty
Right. Tsukiji, you're right. The things are always moving. Water is always running. Therefore, no smell whatsoever. However, the bacteria in the air, you cannot control it.
Right.
Here in New Toyosu Market, yes, you see running water under the gutter. And then air is controlled too, so it is safer that way. And you're right. There are many reasons why you don't feel that live action, but it is much less. And I've been there once, twice so far. But yeah, it's different.
Right.
I mean, you can go there and then come back out, and your clothes don't smell like fish this time.
And also, I mean, if you've been to listeners, if you've been to old Tsukiji, you are at risk because the running cars scream at you.
Yeah.
They treat you like an enemy. Like, So much safer in that sense too.
And may I say, I hope Tokyo people don't hear me, but it's too safe for tourists because first floor is the auction floor and tourists cannot go down there.
Mm.
There's an escalator and there's a security guard. What are you doing? So you're not allowed to go downstairs. So you walk around on the second floor, but there's the wall separating the walk passage from the auction space. So even though you're on second floor, you don't, and even if you fall, you can't fall because there you have a glass wall.
Right.
So you can't hear anything, you can't smell anything. But you're safe.
But but you can see it actually.
You can see it, but from second floor, a two-story building, it was through the glass.
Right.
Yeah, you see people moving around. That's about it.
Right. Hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, better than nothing, but yeah. So it's there's a trade-off.
Yeah. Well, at least they have a lottery program going on, so you can go see the tuna auction at 5 a.m.
Oh, wow.
When you have jet lag, of course.
Right.
Perfect, right? You can't, oh, I'm up. It's 4 o'clock a.m. What do I do? Well, let's say,
yeah. Right. And then you have, after that, you get 6 o'clock a.m., 6 a.m., beautiful sushi breakfast.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll talk about that too.
Yeah. Right. I think the biggest benefit, I think the big motivation for the Japanese government, the Tokyo government, was to clear the HACCP, which is a hazard analysis critical control point.
Yep.
So that's the global standard for, you know, hygiene standard.
Yep.
So I heard it's mandatory to clear the standard for anybody who occupies the booth at the Toyota market. So that's good.
It is good, yes. And that's Japan has been pretty much single race society, unlike the New York. New York area. So everybody grew up in the same culture, so you know what to do, what not to do with the experience, by experience, how you grew up. But now, even Japan, a lot of immigrants from foreign countries with different religious background or eating dietary habits. So just like New York, as long as you have HACCP plan in place, anybody from any background can join the operation, and the food operation will be executed safely. So that's good for the people who eat and visit Japan too.
Right. And from now on, it's going to be more important because Japanese population, like many other countries, is shrinking, and you know, and it has to be more globalized. So that's great. So compared to the old sushi market, what are missing?
The action, the live action, the wheeling and dealing and yelling and sure, it's like nagging my ex-wife or whatever. Okay, that's not a good analogy because I don't miss my ex-wife, but there's somebody like, oh, your parent, your dad or your mom do this, do that all the time. You're so annoying, mom, dad, but once he, she passed away, you miss that. So Tsukiji, what's that? You get yelled at by, get the hell out of my way. Oops. But you hear nothing. You just watch it from upstairs. Even on auction floor, much civilized environment. Much less people. Like you said, it's much bigger than Tsukiji, so less crowded.
Ooh, so less competitive in a way. So
less competitive.
Yeah, in terms of like, you know, the ambience. So you don't have to, and you're okay not to yell.
Yeah, I think they have more time to bring fish from the auction floor to the delivery trucks than Tsukiji did. And Tsukiji, if you do that, if you rush it and tell them to get out of my way, you would gain few seconds.
Right.
However, Toyosu, it is so calm, quiet, civilized, organized. So even if you do that, you would look like stupid a-hole, and you would not gain any seconds.
Right.
So
interesting. Wow, that's a civilization, like you said. Wow, I didn't expect that answer. Yeah. So, but the number of vendors, do you think it's the same or some people
less? A lot of people took the opportunity to close the business. Relocation cost was expensive. Sure, the Tokyo Metropolitan Government subsidized a lot of it, but it was not easy for everybody to move.
Is that because many of the vendors, wholesalers, were older?
Older, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's like they aged with the Tsukiji market.
Mm-hmm. Generations.
Right. And it sounds like, Toyosu market costs a lot of more money to have a booth or...
Yeah, and to the contrary, if it costs you more to have a booth, you should have more income. However, the total the gross revenue of Toyosu Market has been 20% less than The last year of Tsukiji.
Wow.
It was a necessary move, but financially, still a long way to recover for the vendors.
Right.
And also,
Yeah, so I heard even that the Toyosu is expected to incur a $83 million annual deficit, which was supposed to be supplemented by the release of the Tsukiji market, I mean, the site, to the private sector. I don't know what's going on with that thing. So, yeah. But the other thing is, you know, the three-tier system, just like alcohol distribution in New York. So you have to have fishermen and wholesaler and middlemen and the chef. That is the base of the Tsukiji market system, right? So I think by moving to Toyosu, you know, you have to have some smart way. I mean, if you want to deal with or without Toyosu or Tsukiji or in that kind of system, there's a little paradigm shift in terms of fish distribution.
Yes, and that the paradigm shift has been going on for a while. And let's say 40 years ago, the fish distribution going through Japan's markets, the fish market system was about 90-something percent, whereas now it's less than 50%, meaning that the big retailers in the U.S., let's say Whole Foods, buy directly from the fishermen or fishermen union and bypassing the wholesalers to cut the cost. And that trend is going, it's not going to stop. So the fish market function is going to be less and less, just like here too.
Yeah, I don't know which is better because that's, you know, the capitalism, the consumers win eventually for the efficiency, and probably more profit is returned to fishermen, original.
You think so, but that the profit doesn't really get returned to the fishermen. And when a large retailer comes into play, then they only want to buy certain kind of fish, certain size, certain grade. So that type of the fish consumption goes up,
right.
and therefore price goes up. And the fish, even the same fish, but does not meet the requirement of the size of the big retailer, gets dumped.
Right.
Doesn't get picked up by a big distribution.
Right. So fillet of something and no head, no tail.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's to the consumer who wants that, who want that particular fish, particular size of the fish, it's great because you get the benefit of cutting the middleman. However, in a big picture, only that type of fish, that size gets the value. The rest gets dumped. I mean, usually the fish at that certain size, the retailer wants at its peak size. And usually peak size, peak time, peak time is usually richest, or health, oiliest, or meat has a lot of nutrients before fish give birth. So it's round and heavy and oily like my belly. I don't know that. So when fisherman goes after that kind of fish, then reproduction of the fish is going to be less. So fishermen, know, they have a sonar system, drone to find the school of fish. And you go there, effectively catch everything, then what's left?
Right.
So consumer, yes, good, happy maybe. But in the long run, consumer may not be happy because that type of fish will be gone.
Right. Yeah. So. And also the diversity.
Yeah, that's very important.
Right. And honestly, I like that off cuts. It's more tasty. Like, I'm the first one to grab into the head of the whole fish. Yeah. It's like, it's really good. And people
don't. Only you.
No, but some of my friends. It's really like, you know, the kama or the head or. Those things, you need to be educated by anybody, like retailers or chefs. I think many chefs started to be more sustainably aligned.
I think so.
So hopefully these people are going to be, you know, replacing the role of general retailers.
Yeah. One of my good friends, chef in San Diego, Chef Davin White. Davin White. He does, he buys King Campachi. It's a responsibly raised Campachi in La Paz, Mexico. Mm. He buys those and he uses meat for sashimi. And then he grill the head, bone, tails, collarbone, and then get the dashi out of that, and then make the gravy. He just made a gravy sauce and made a Caesar salad dressing too.
Oh my God, umami bomb.
Yeah. So I think that new school of American chef are getting not just talk about being sustainable, but actually doing the dark side, the other side of the sustainability. Catch less is one side. Utilizing to the higher yield of the fish you catch is another side of sustainability.
Right. So, so I think we keep discussing this because it's going to be more important, like you said. Right. So what are the reaction of wholesalers considering the whole regional system is collapsing at the Toyosu market?
Yeah. Well, that's it's a slow degeneration. So they are aware of it and they try to do something to tackle the trend. But that doesn't mean that the chefs and the restaurant who care about the quality of a fish and how it's been handled, how the live fish was transported, because no stress and doing the live truck tank, live fish tank truck, the blanket was covered, the fish tank, so fish is not stressed from the road noise or honking car noise. But anyway, they're still there, meaning that those remaining wholesalers in the fish market, those customers will be there for sure.
Right.
Even though a big retail buy directly from the fishing boat, the fishermen using it, they will be there. So I think they're trying to, they've been trying to maintain and enrich the relationship with those chefs more than ever.
No question, because even if I don't go to New York City's most expensive restaurants very often, but the
not
quality.
Often, but sometimes.
By invitation, thank you. So they really know the cost, but really intentionally, like really choose fish from Toyosu or Tsukiji, because it's not just, you know, it's like a one-off thing. It's accumulated skills over centuries to how to protect.
And for the fish to get to the Toyosu market, the fisherman will take good care of the fish as soon as fish is out of the water and maintain temperature and less stress and when delaying the rigor mortis phase to begin. And then, so throughout the logistics for the fish to get to Toyosu market, the fish has been pampered.
Right. Yeah. So I went to Aomori. It's a Oma Aomori. That's the most expensive bluefin tuna, poor people say. But that was the time I witnessed there's a small truck that fits only one big fat tuna. And then they go straight to Tsukiji market.
Yeah.
That's the system, so it has to be good, and local people couldn't eat it because it's sold to the market.
Yeah, too expensive.
Right. So.
Well, another thing that the Toyosu, the wholesalers complain about after they move from Tsukiji is that they have no place to go eat lunch or breakfast.
Oh.
Because now all the sushi bars surrounding the fish market, they're there for the tourists.
Totally. And it was booming. When I was last time I was there, they're still the same.
So they complain because usually they get off from work around 7 a.m. And no restaurants open.
Right.
So they go to the convenience store and get salmon rice bowl.
So sad.
they're sad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a big problem, I think. Yeah, there's a motivation, right? The workers have to have that kind of cultural motivation too.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And what about the buyers, you know, the chefs and...
So this is probably the main reason why Toyosu market revenue is less than Tsukiji.
Mm.
The reason is that it's far. So people, chefs don't want to go.
Right.
Now you have to drive 15, 20 minutes by car. And early in the morning, you know, sometimes not many trains running or subway running. So chefs don't come.
Right.
I mean, you see them, but so much less.
Right.
So with no chef, then no action, or less chefs, less action, boring. Well, here's the order. Fluke, tuna, how many percent, whatever, shellfish, how many pieces. And then wholesalers just pack, deliver, pack, deliver. I guess it's more, again, civilized way of doing business, but it's kind of, you know, missing.
Sounds like as if Union Square Farmers Market moved to like out of borough, like, you know, somewhere. Does it's easy to imagine how people would go.
Yeah.
And some other loyal chefs, I spoke to one of them, and he runs, you know, he's a second generation of really popular sushi place in the Yurakucho area. And so he goes there by bus. And the bus stop doesn't have awning. That means that when it rains, it's a problem. And it's even worse in the summertime. The sun is scorching in the first thing in the morning, even. The ice melts, and it's not good for the fish. Yeah.
And a passenger of the bus, even in Japan, they say, oh, you look like you're smelly. You smell like fish.
Yeah.
They get stared at.
Right. Yeah. So that's a, I think that's a serious problem. Like little thing that should be very important for users, like chefs, that's they have to be asked first what they need, which didn't seem to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's true. They care about the wholesaler's needs, which is to deliver fish without being bothered by chef.
Right.
Because chefs go there and, oh, no, I don't want that. I don't want this. I want that. Yeah, that could slow them down. But
without chefs, buyers, what's the point of having a market? Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, so we'll take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we'll talk about what you can do at the new Toyosu market if you visit. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Tetsuya Nick Sakagami, who is a fish expert based in Los Angeles and author of Sushi Master, an expert guide to sourcing, making, and enjoying sushi at home. So we've been talking about the new Toyosu market. So I heard there are any, like, some unexpected type of stories about the new market. Can you share?
Well, I think that would be the whole workers there don't have place to go eat.
Yeah.
And unexpected. Oh, so and I think that the people on the floor, they miss tourists a little bit.
Oh, interesting.
Because they say it's boring. You know, left chef coming, dealing, doing the deals, right? So they're kind of standing around and doing, filling up the delivery orders. You know, back in the day, Tsukiji was too much tourists. It was dangerous to both wholesalers and tourists. But now, Some I talk to, they say, oh yeah, some, you know, I miss those tourists sometimes. So because otherwise I don't talk.
It's like office workers versus theater actors, right?
Yeah, so they say I get sleepy at 5 o'clock, but if you're talking to tourists, then at least, you know, you feel like you're doing something, educating consumers and keeping myself awake or interested.
Nice. So there's no good coffee shop around there.
No.
Either. That's sad. All right. So you said you have some suggestions. I mean, but let me ask you this. Based on what we discussed, what's your verdict on the new market? Is it a successful move or not? And also, what's your suggestion?
Absolute necessity to move. So it's not a passing point or not. They have to. But they are so black and white. And it was back in the day, I think they need a little bit of a room. They should have left the room to wiggle or adjust, update. I think they will have to make some adjustment.
Right. So what kind of adjustments?
Well, if I were them, I would say, I would have a tourist day. Saturday, you know, after 7 a.m., tourist day, right?
Yeah, sell tickets and make profit.
Yeah, well, they do... So they do tuna auction lottery, and
is it for fee? You have to pay for it?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm sorry, I don't know, but the third parties, they have tickets, and they do sell those to tourists.
Right.
I don't know, $80 per person, something. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but so Saturday, downtown Los Angeles, California, Saturday flower market is open for to public. So before I go to my Ikebana class, I go there and pick up my flowers. Toyota market too, Saturday, business is not that busy, so they should be done by a little earlier than usual, so it should be done by 7 a.m. for sure. And after that, 7 to 9 a.m., they reduce the staff and cater towards the tourist.
Right.
You know, that's important in the long run to develop the Toyosu brand and get the foreign tourists and domestic buyers engaged with the fish.
Right.
And that's if they get a chance to talk to the fishmongers and learn about the fish and beautiful fish. It doesn't. It wouldn't hurt by any means for them to.
And also the educational aspects that we discussed to be responsible.
Yeah, and hire some foreigner translators for English and German, Italian, Thai, French, Thai, Chinese, what, and Cambodian, Thai. I think that'll be fun.
I think you should propose, I don't know, editorial, sent to Nikkei newspaper or something like that.
Yeah. I think that'll be fun.
or New York Times. That could be even more influential.
All right, let's not get into it.
I think if you are Japanese and saying something in Japanese newspaper, I don't think it's strong. Right, because such a global market that you need a global pressure.
You got it. And you can write your article on Forbes magazine. I'll come too.
I'll think about it.
I have a couple of others. Another one is that invite chefs from Japan or from all over the world and have a free lunch on. Usually chefs are available on either Monday or a Wednesday, those are their slow days, and bring them in to the market and invite them and have open conversation, discussion with alcohol, with the wholesalers. And so chef would know what's coming next or what's available, what's being underutilized. And among wholesalers would know, okay, this is what the current chef's head, where their head's at, because before, that communication between chefs and fishmongers were there. But like I said, today at Toyosu, it's so much less and limited. So I think that recreating that environment for them to, you know, discuss and talk stuff casually is important for both of them.
So more openness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Communication.
Yeah. And information sharing from both sides. And I think that this is something similar to what I was saying first, but the lottery program for a guided auction floor tour on a busy day. It's not for the tourists, daily action, Like I said, Toyosu is not that crowded as Tsukiji used to be.
Right.
So if you have a market designated tour guide who can speak the language of that day for that tourist group, and then five person and then wear the red hat or something or yellow flag, so that the people who work on the first floor, the auction floor, would know who they are. But this time around, it's they wouldn't be yelled at because it's they're not enough tourists on the first floor.
Right. you can yell. There's nobody to yell at. But it's important, right? Because probably if you go to a supermarket, you only see cut fish packaged. I mean, it's Maximus, Mummies, you know, some fish on ice at Whole Foods or something like that. So I think that's really important.
Yeah. Like, the funny story is that in Japan, as a Osakana Meister myself, as a fish master, I don't do it, but my colleagues, they go to elementary school in Japan, and then they host a seminar or a one-hour conversation with little kids that titled Fish Has Bones. Not just the U.S., Japan too. Kids don't see fish, the whole fish. Like you said, every fish thing is packed, filleted, no bones.
Right. You're not talking about squid, right?
Oh, squid, they're beautiful, cuttlefish.
Yeah, that's true.
Smart.
Right.
I saw, my wife and I was scuba diving in Phuket, 3 weeks ago? And we saw giant cuttlefish. Beautiful, rainbow color, moving, eyes are locked on my eye, locked in my eyes.
Wow.
They're looking, and little things, legs moving, don't really move, and big, and family. Anyway, I'm sorry. Squid.
Well, that's the thing, though. If you see that thing and connect it to your table, you want to eat it responsibly.
That's so true.
Right? Yeah. By the way, the legs are the most important. I think gut and legs, to me, is the most delicious part.
Everybody has preferences.
Yeah. I'm like a, you know, the most useful person to clean up everything on the table. So
yeah, we need people like you, more people like you.
Yeah, and because they're the most delicious part, in my opinion.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so so you are very good advocate for responsible and sustainable fish consumption. And how do you describe, you know, this away from the market discussion, but currently, as you are deeply involved in industry globally, how do you think people are aware of, in you know, the issue of sustainable fish consumption?
Well, the big picture is that economic incentive. If the fish is inexpensive, regardless sustainable or not, consumers and chefs, restaurateurs will go for that fish. Except those who are curious and educated about what would happen if we continue eating fish the way we do for next decades. So, you know, it's a sustainable fish movement. I think became recognized, started being recognized in about 2006-07, around that time. And then some chefs and consumers and restaurants, they just jump on the bandwagon. And then some of them, or most of them, they got off the bandwagon.
Mm.
Today, there are businesses and chefs and consumers who are advocating and practicing sustainable fish consumption.
Mm.
They are here to stay, and they will continue to grow the number and the voice and the impact. And when I see my kids growing, they say, not about fish, but reuse, recycle, one more thing about products and plastics and so. Mm-hmm. I think that
the repurpose or whatever,
kids will today will be more cautious about that issue of a responsible fish eating.
Right.
And the younger generation today, people in 20s and 30s, they found a terminology called upcycling.
Mm.
And I think the upcycling will start coming into a food industry eventually.
Mm.
And that translates, in my mind, that will translate to increasing the yield of the fish, meaning that don't just eat the portion of the meat portion, and you can scrape meat off from bones and back of the eye and cheek and collarbones.
Right. And I've been speaking to chefs who hunt or fish or those people, and naturally sustainable-minded,
right,
because they are responsible
right
for killing animals, and they know the weight of the lives that they kill.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, again, going back to the fish market discussion, I think it's important to have that kind of market, classic style market. And I think your suggestions are really vital to connect consumers, chefs, and the fishermen.
Yeah, we're going to make it fun, you know.
Right.
I didn't study much because school wasn't fun. But,
Right. Okay, so we're running out of time, but I really want to mention your book, Sushi Master, an expert guide to sourcing, making, and enjoying sushi at home. Mm. So tell us about the book.
Oh, it's a simple cookbook focusing fish, of course, because I'm a fish dude. And the tagline in my mind for the book is, if I can do it, you can do it. Meaning that I'm not I don't call myself chef. I have too much respect for the chef who do dedicated their lives to cooking. But I play with the fish and I eat fish and I grew up eating fish. So this is something really simple. I throughout the book, I focus on, again, responsible eating of fish. For example, salmon. You buy salmon from your local fish market, and you make sushi out of it. Well, by the way, my book focuses on sourcing too. If you don't know how to source your fish right from the right source, then you know you're kind of left in the dark.
Yeah, or in ambulance.
Yeah. Right? No, that too. Yeah, ambulance. Yeah. So make sashimi out of salmon, and you make salmon. A grilled salmon out of it, and the next day, that grilled salmon, if you don't finish eating, then you can separate it into small portions and make a rice bowl out of it, or you can smoke it, cure it, and with the Japanese whiskey or brandy, and you can make salmon candy out of it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, then, I'm sorry, one last, the shun.
Mm-hmm.
The word shun is the, in fish world, fish is at its peak season for us to eat. That means they're accessible and tasty, and the price should be cheap.
Right.
So,
like in right now, I mean, maybe it's past, but summer, like Pacific, Japan, the restaurants put the sign, we have summer, and it's cheap and the most fatty and So, and I really like the, you know, it's the your book covers basic tools and how to buy fish like you were sourcing, which is, I almost haven't heard of, like, you know, in the Western context.
True.
So if you go to Japanese supermarket in Japan, it's like this waiting, shining, and the sashimi fish packaged separately. So Yeah, I think it's a really important part of the book too. And also plenty of classic and creative recipes in your book.
Yeah.
So.
A lot of cookbooks are out there, but I'm a, like I said, I'm not a chef. I'm a wholesaler. I'm an importer. So I know what's behind, until the fish gets to the restaurant kitchen, I know more than chefs. So I hope I brought that knowledge into the book so consumers or readers can make educated decision on fish purchasing.
Right. That's the most important and scary part, but you, you know, cleared it for
demystify
users.
Like
yeah,
you do.
Right, so where can we find your book?
Well, Amazon.com.
Okay, yay. Sushi Master.
Yeah.
By Tetsuya Nikusakagami.
Hai.
All right, so also where can we find your updates online?
That's a good question. I think Amazon.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, update on myself?
Yeah, yourself.
Well, I don't.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll look into it.
Okay.
How to do update of my action and my activities.
Yeah, but you have an Instagram or?
Oh, yeah, yes. Nick underscore Sakagami, I think.
All right, yeah. Not many people remember their own Instagram account, including myself, yes. All right, so but thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Again, and hopefully it's going to be soon again. You're going to join me. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or kikokatayama.com. Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Engineer today is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.